Welcome to the Nerdogram Podcast. The ultimate mashup between the Enneagram personality tool and all your favorite characters from film, TV, and literature. On today's episode, we are typing characters from Black Panther. Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Nerdogram Podcast. My name is Lance.
My name is Kate.
Hey Kate, happy Black History Month.
You too. Are you reading or watching anything exciting pertaining to Black History Month?
Not necessarily pertaining. We've started having conversations with our kids about it. So when this comes out actually, I don't know my days. It comes out the 31st, doesn't it?
Comes out on the 1st.
So this is the start of Black History Month. Yeah, we've started talking about it in terms of our house, but my wife's also an educator, so conversation has come up about what goes into schools and what doesn't go into schools as we're kind of in this tumultuous time. And so there's been a lot of conversation around the dinner table. And in some ways, it's prompted me to have conversations with my kids about some of these things and begin age appropriately to start talking about race and talk about how we treat people who don't look like us and how people who may be look differently or believe differently or act differently than us don't get treated well, and what we should do about it and how we should be good friends and those sorts of things. So my kids dutifully listened and nodded their heads and then asked me about the ice cream we hadn't eaten yet. So it was not, you know,
you're planting seeds.
I did something. I'm not sure. This might be the start of them just saying, "Dad's talking, we're just going to nod." And then he eventually stops.
My oldest loves talking about Martin Luther King Jr., although he kind of gets his name wrong a little bit. He actually thought Jr. was his last name for the longest time. So he started calling him Martin Jr. And I'm like, oh, no, baby. Let's talk about senior, junior, the third. This means something different than what you think it means. But he was excited. I'm part of a church. And one of the really cool things that my church is doing is they have raised money with the community to purchase books featuring people of color to donate to our local elementary school, because there's lots of books out there that feature people of color, but not that many of them end up in public libraries and school libraries, and our kiddos don't have access to them. And so kids with black and brown skin don't get to see heroes who look like them in their books. And so I thought that was a pretty cool initiative.
That is really cool. We might have to look at something like that for our own community, because I know that's something that, man, I was an adult before I started learning about some of these crucial things like Black Wall Street and Juneteenth and some of these things. I mean, I was a lot older than I should have been before I learned about some of these things.
Same. And I have a degree in history, and I focused on American history, and I didn't know what Juneteenth was until maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really embarrassing and shameful that you can be an educated person and not have heard about these really important events in our nation's history.
Mm-hmm. So support our teachers. I know there's a lot of conversation going on kind of as various bills. Kate and I are in Indiana, so there's currently some legislation that's going through that affects our teachers and affects how they might not be able to talk to their students and some things like that. That I know we're passionate in our house because, man, teachers do so much. I see it every single day. And to say, you didn't come here to get my own takes on education, so we'll stick to Enneagram. But I'm glad it's Black History Month, and I'm glad that we're diving into some great films and some great books. And it was really hard to pick just these few. And it made me think of how representative we are throughout the rest of the year. And so we might have to work in some other ones like Parable of the Sower or some things like that.
Absolutely. That's a really good point, because every month should be Black History Month, because Black people have been part of the history of our country and the world. And so it's good to have a time that we are intentional about learning stories and listening to stories that we maybe don't hear as much of the rest of the year. That intentionality is good, but it's also really good to normalize the history and to recognize the value that Black and Brown people have played, particularly in our American context, for the last 400 plus years.
Does that mean I can convince you to read that one book that I was gushing about the last 2 weeks? The fantasy book?
Maybe, if it's not another 750 pages, like with all the action in the last 100 pages.
Okay, all the action is in the last 100, but it still might be like 700 pages.
But this is the book you also told me how it ends, and it's sad. And yeah, the love interest dies.
Yeah.
My opposition to this book is not about being able to identify with the characters. It's about the love interest dying. Like, that's the line for me.
Well, you've just scratched off half of my books. So,
See, it's funny. You and I both share a line with the four. And so you can move to the four when you're not healthy. I move to the four when I am healthy. And you would think that I would have some access or appreciation of sadness. But I do not. I do not. I never want to feel sad. Sometimes I do feel sad, but I never want to feel sad. And when I do, I don't enjoy it.
You're wholeheartedly a two. You want everyone to be in love and connected and their best selves.
I know. It's true. I do. Well, I really enjoyed getting to watch a film that featured people of color, but also had that kind of happy, redemptive ending that I enjoyed. It wasn't all happy, but I really love the Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther is such a great film. And I remember the 90s, I think it was, maybe early 2000s, there was a Black Panther show. Might have been earlier 2000s or something. And that was the first time I encountered Black Panther. Thought, oh, this is cool. When I heard that they were doing it, I thought, oh boy, this will be a great addition to the MCU. And then they just knocked it out of the park.
Oh, it's so good. It's probably my favorite of the Avengers, like independent movies that focuses on just one of the Avengers. Mm-hmm. It's probably my favorite.
Yeah, this was one that I talked about watching with my wife, who's not really into superhero movies. I said, I know, you know, this one I think you would enjoy. I got her to watch Hawkeye. I might be able to get her to watch this one.
This one. We watched it with our kids, and our kids have seen it before, but it was probably a year ago. And I think they were maybe just a touch too young for all of them to really appreciate it. They're just now getting big enough to really enjoy superhero movies and to be able to follow the plot like an adult superhero and be able to follow the more complicated plot. And they actually argued with me over it on Friday night when we were going to have family movie night. They demanded Harry Potter. So we watched Harry Potter in the Chamber of Secrets. I love Harry Potter. Our listeners who have been listening from the beginning know that Harry Potter is the story of my childhood. But I have watched Harry Potter 1 or 2 about 15,000 times in the last month, and I'm a little bit over it. But still, we watched Harry Potter. But the next day, with them complaining, no, we don't want to have to watch this Black Panther movie. And then they loved it, have watched it every day since. We got it this morning. It was 6:45. They're eating cereal and watching Black Panther before school. We have the costumes. They're arguing over who is going to be T'Challa. And then one of them saying, well, you can be the general. Like, but the general's a girl. And yeah, it's been pretty great though.
Well, and if you go to Disneyland, they have Avengers Campus. And so you can actually go and the Wakanda Warriors come out and they'll gather the girls and they actually teach them to be Wakanda Warriors. It's really cool.
That sounds awesome.
They have like a little ceremony and stuff. It's awesome.
You know what I also really love? I don't know if you've watched it with your kids or if your kids are a touch younger than mine, but my children did not notice that all the characters, with two exceptions, are Black.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. It's a great film. They're looking at heroes. And that makes me optimistic that they will grow up being able to see the beauty and the wonder of every different background and not have an us and them kind of mindset, but an appreciative mindset. Now, there were some questions around characters. There's one character who has the wooden piece in his lip. They're like, that doesn't look comfortable. And that's an honest question about cultural differences. But I don't know that I would have had the same response as a white girl in the 90s in a predominantly white community. I think it would have felt like an other to me. And I'm really optimistic that my kids watched it and they're appreciative, but there's no sense of otherness.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think so. And you know, as we were talking with our kids over the dinner table about racial differences and things like that, my son has a friend at daycare that he runs around everywhere with. And so we were talking about him as a person of color, and the way we identified is like, yeah, this person is different than you in skin tone and these things. Mm-hmm. And isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Like, isn't this great? Isn't it so cool that so many of us are so different? And I said, you know, there are all kinds of people that are even all kinds of different, and all around the world, they're different, and we can talk to them. And it's awesome that we're different and unique. And it's then I was saying, you know, just like you are unique from your sister and you're unique mm-hmm. from mommy and daddy. And then they had to list everyone in our family three times and how everyone's different. And we're like, yep, they're different. But we talked about like how different is good. Like different is a great thing.
It is.
And I think it's how we couch those things. I don't know. We didn't have these kinds of conversations. At least I don't remember them. We probably had some conversation. My parents were pretty intentional with us. At one time, I spent part of my childhood around the greater Chicago area. So I was very much in a mixing pot where I grew up for part of my childhood. And so then moving as we did to like central southern Indiana, and that not being the case, it was kind of a difference for me. But even still, I have a lot of embedded stuff that I'm still unpacking and trying to unlearn. And that's part of the goodness of Black History Month is, like you said, the intentionalness of it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dive into Black Panther. And, you know, we've been doing the lightning round first, and we kind of like it. We did it just to be different. And then we're like, ooh, this is really a good, actually. This has been fun. So we're going to do a lightning round because there's a lot of characters and many of them don't get enough screen time for us to do deep dives, but we're going to go as deep as we can on some of these characters.
Sounds great to me.
So let's start out with the good general, Okoye.
I think she's the six.
I do too. What was the defining moment for you?
When they think T'Challa has died and Killmonger has taken the throne. And Nakia wants her to leave with them. She's like, no, I serve the throne. I serve the throne of Wakanda. And it's that fierce, fierce loyalty. And she's able to shift when she realizes T'Challa is still alive. She will then fight for him. But that sense of loyalty, that utter commitment, not just to a person, but to a system.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. I also think she might have a five wing because she's not very people-y. And she strikes me as someone who has that introversion, is a little less dependent on others,
mm-hmm.
a little more sarcastic. I think she's got a little bit of five energy in there with her sixness.
Yeah, I see it too. Definitely, I think she's a six. It's her relation to the system and her loyalty, not just to the throne or to T'Challa, but also to her warriors. She has a fierce loyalty to them. And we've talked before about the similarities between like a six and an eight. Mm-hmm. And so she gave off those kind of vibes for me.
Same. What about Everett Ross?
The stereotypical American who's waving the mediocre white man.
Thinks he has all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I peg him actually as a six.
If I you do look, as well.
He's always fearful. He wants to present like he's tough. So he shows up in all these situations like he's the one in charge. He's the one who has all answers. He's the one who, this is my crime scene, you know, kind of attitude. And yet when everything happens, he is the most fearful, the one who's scanning for danger. He's often showing insecurity in his own thoughts and his own abilities. And yeah, I have a hard time seeing him as any other number. I know you thought maybe a three.
I think that there could be some three in there in stress points or he's a sexual six where he is presenting with more aggression, mostly because he does tend to think he has all the answers. He wants to take charge of a situation. He kind of wants to be in charge, even when he shouldn't be. Like when they are going before M'Baku and he really needs to just shut up. and let the people who know what they're talking about talk. And he feels like he needs to and has the right to put his opinion in there and kind of gets put in his place. That feels to me like there's some of that aggression there, where I wondered if there was some threeness. But as I think about it more, I think he's probably a sexual six, and he has that, can look a little more eight-ish, where that side is a little more aggressive and it's a posturing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of sixes can become, not always, but can become kind of yes men or suits. And sixes are also, in a really good sense, oriented towards the common good. They're drawn to law enforcement. They're drawn to civil service. So this is someone who has a military career, who is now working for the CIA, which, to be fair, if you work for the CIA, you should probably be scanning for danger a lot. That's an asset more than a liability in that line of work, I think.
Seems like something they would teach you in the CIA.
In my CIA for Dummies book, which I do actually own, that awareness of potential danger seems to be a pretty important part of the job.
Well, that disqualifies me.
Oh, me too. I also couldn't keep it a secret. Like, hey, I've known you for like a week, but can I tell you my deepest secret? I'm actually a spy.
Did you know I'm undercover?
Don't tell anybody.
I feel like I can trust you because we have this deep connection and I know all about your kids, which would probably just come off as a threat. It might be the best, like, Kate flips everybody.
I've got your whole life story now and I can kill you.
But not just you.
But the grandma you told me about.
You
and I'll do it with a smile on my face.
And she's smiling. She goes straight to grandma. I love it. So what about Wakabi?
I think he's also a six.
We got the six parade.
This is a very sixy episode. I'm so sixy. I'm too sixy for my shirt. Okay, it's late. I'm sorry. I'll stop. I think Wakabi is a six. And the reason I think he's a six is because T'Challa is one of his oldest and dearest friends, and he abandons him for Killmonger because Killmonger is the stronger leader. And I think that is that six looking for that strong leader, looking to be the second to someone who's kind of rough and tumble, who's willing to do the dirty work. And sixes gravitate to that. They like the strong man.
Yeah, because he shows up having killed Claw. Mm-hmm. And that is that thing that he was concerned about, that T'Challa isn't strong enough to lead them. Yeah, I agree.
What about M'Baku?
So I think we got a lot of reactionary people in this episode, actually, is kind of where we're at. I see M'Baku as an eight. His choice to emerge speaks to his own concern about T'Challa's strength for the role. But he doesn't show up after the fact, after T'Challa has not made good taking out Claw. He shows up before because he sees a power vacuum. And his solution is, for the good of the country, for the good of Wakanda, is to show up and be that strength. And when he gets beat, he doesn't stick around. He doesn't join back up. He slinks back off to the mountains to his stronghold, because I think that's he encounters his weakness. What is it? One of our episodes, you talked about how a young eight believes they're invincible because of their own power, mm-hmm. until they discover that they're not. And they have to come to grips with that. And I think we see in his character development someone who has not encountered his own vulnerability until he does. Mm-hmm. And then he has to figure out what to do with it. And it's his arc that ultimately leads to T'Challa's resurrection story, is he has to first experience kind of his own resurrection story. And I'm going off Enneagram and going into technical writing, aren't I?
No, I think you're right. And he has a self-possession about him. Mm-hmm. He's supremely confident in his own power. And there are several numbers who project power.
Mm-hmm.
But the eights are the ones who really embody it. They're the most powerful personality type. And they don't have the same need to prove themselves that other people do. And I mean, he's coming to participate in ritual combat. I mean, that having that fight with T'Challa is part, it's the way you claim the throne. He had to do that. He had to prove that he was the better man. And he wasn't able to beat T'Challa, but he doesn't seem to be bitter about it. Like, he kind of respects T'Challa for having beat him. And that's something about Aids too, is when you stand up to them and match them, they respect that. They respect strength in others.
Yeah, enough that they protect T'Challa. They put him in the salt bath. They keep him safe. There's that almost respect, because he doesn't tell them initially, oh yeah, we've got T'Challa. It's right. Only whenever they offer him the flower. And it almost feels like for him, that's a moment, right? He could claim greater power for himself and really squash any sense of vulnerability. He could take all the powers of the Black Panther, but he doesn't.
He also has a little bit of fun intimidating Ross. And I enjoy that as well. Like, I'll feed you to my children. He's like, just kidding. We're vegetarians.
That cracks me up every time.
Which, and I am also very skeptical that you get that kind of muscle mass without animal protein. Just like, that is a big man. That is a living off lettuce. He does not look like a diet of lettuce and yogurt.
So we're waiting for the M'Baku diet to come out, and then we can be beach ready or ready for a... And can I just pause and say, he has the best throne room of anybody in this show.
It's pretty intense.
I mean,
got a great view.
Oh, I know. And this, all the sticks and the, like, those window, like, come on.
My favorite thing about this movie is the way they took so many different African cultures and created Wakanda. I feel like that was somebody's dream project. To get to do that. And it really displayed some of the most beautiful aspects of African culture, from the dress to the architecture to the music. It was wonderful.
I agree. So let's talk about one of the baddies in this.
Claw.
The Claw. So Kate and I don't agree on this one, which should make for a good conversation.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you know, I can, either or is fine.
Okay. I'll go first. I think Claw's a 7. I think he's a 7 because he's very jovial. He makes light of situations that he should not make light of. He plays with people in a way that's not great. He seems to me to be an optimistic person. Even when he's in pretty dire circumstances, he can still make a joke, or he still thinks he's going to win. He doesn't seem to be embracing a variety of emotions. Doesn't seem particularly emotive to me. Feels more like a 7.
I think you make a great case. He struck me as very reactionary, which is why I didn't go to the 7. And I sort of, by process of elimination, he's not an 8. He doesn't have that energy. He doesn't strike me as a 6. He's not particularly fearful. So I kind of lean towards the 4 and sort of embracing his own uniqueness and his own identity in a way that allows him to put together a band of misfits and to do some of the things that he does. He's a little sarcastic, which I could see a 4 filling that role. And again, it's just his sense of uniqueness and identity that comes across, whether that's he's a big personality as a 7 or whether he's striving for his own authenticity. I think it would be an interesting thing to explore more with Claw.
So maybe that's a good place for our listeners to weigh in. Do you think Claw is a 4 or a 7 or something else entirely? Well, are you ready to jump into some of our more prominent characters?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to let you leap off with our first one, Nakia.
Okay. I think Nakia is an Enneagram 1. Initially, I put her pretty quickly into the gut triad, which is the 8, 9s, or 1s, because she's so concerned with social justice. She wants to help people. She's putting herself in dangerous situations. She's standing up against violent forces of evil, trying to help people in small ways and big ways. And that takes a lot of guts. And any number can be oriented towards social justice. Anyone can have a concern for those who are in need or a desire to right the wrongs. So that's not just 8, 9s, and 1s. But 8s, 9s, and 1s are particularly perceptive and tend to feel more of a burden to be part of writing what is wrong in the world, especially eights and ones. She is a very powerful person, and she's willing to fight in a figurative and a literal sense, which might shift her over to the eight. But to me, she didn't feel like she had the energy of an eight. She didn't feel like she was reactive the way an eight is. She feels like someone who's drawn towards the competency stance. She also strikes me as someone who's incredibly dutiful, even to the point where she puts what I think we could call her calling, her vocational calling to be a war dog, to leave Wakanda, to be an advocate and an agent for change in the world, over her relationship with T'Challa, because they're not together at this point, but there's this unspoken agreement that they still love each other. You know, she holds his hand when they're on their way back for the coronation, and they're kissing. He says to her, "Hey, you could be a queen." So there's still this undercurrent that they love each other. They're not involved in anyone else. And she's still saying no to him so that she can say yes to her duty to serve the world. And that feels like something a one would do.
I agree wholeheartedly. And as a one would do, ones and eights will stand up to people, particularly people in power. There at that opening scene where we first get her and Black Panther in the shootout in the jungle, she steps in the way and stops him from fighting the young child soldier, mm-hmm. and says, "It's a child. We'll take care of him." Mm-hmm. And she makes sure that there's a way, you know, so she inserts herself into a dangerous situation and stands up to the person in power because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And she often does that. She is the moral compass for T'Challa.
Absolutely. And she's the one who's arguing for similar things to Killmonger. I think she and Killmonger have very similar ideologies, but different ways of going about it, or different acceptable ways of going about it. They have the same goal, but the means of reaching that goal is very different.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that when we get to Killmonger. Little nod to where we think Killmonger is on the Enneagram.
But what about Shuri?
So I think Shuri's probably a seven, would be my guess. The way she reframes things, she's always making a joke. She doesn't sit with really sad things at all. Nope. She experiences them, but she moves on very quickly. She doesn't want to stay in the fear. She's always looking for the bright side of things, which is part of what makes her so good at what she does. You take that optimism and you combine it with her brains, and you get this level of creativity that is just spontaneous, but she doesn't seem to stick with any one thing. She seems to dabble in all the things, yes. and always popping out something fun, but then she does it with flair. You know, she makes funny jokes. Like, I love when she makes the new shoes and they don't make any sound, and she names them sneakers. Cracks me up every time. It's cheesy, it's corny, it's lighthearted, and I love it. She really brings the joy. And that's one of the helpful things for her with T'Challa, is that he can easily get caught up in the darkness, and she sort of brings him out of it. As much as, you know, T'Challa really relies on his family and his people to keep him on track. And so Shuri, for him, keeps him light and keeps him in the fun. Mm-hmm. So he's not too serious. So he's not too dark, where Nakia is keeping him on the right path. And so that tension between all of these women in his life, it's really interesting to see how that plays out.
I also wondered briefly, she didn't feel like one to me, but she has this desire to always make things better, mm-hmm. which is a one trait. And ones and sevens share a line. But one of the things that strikes me is a difference between Shuri and, say, Nakia, who we're in agreement is a one. When they're getting ready to go into the last battle, Shuri gives her the armor for the guard, which, forgive me, I don't remember what the name of the king's guard is. It has a name. I don't remember it. And she said, "I can't wear that." Nakia says, "I can't wear that. I'm not one of them." And Shuri's like, "It's armor. Just put it on." So there, Nakia has this sense of duty and like principle. Like, I can't wear this armor that's designated for this group of people who've taken this oath, who've done this training. And Shuri's like, "You need to not get stabbed, honey." Like, Just put this on. A pragmatism mm-hmm. that we see in sevens, where they're a little less reverent. And it's not that those things don't matter to Shuri, they just don't matter more than other things. They don't matter more than physical safety in that particular instance. And she also has this fearlessness about her. Like, she really wants to be part of the excitement. And you get the sense that she's a little disappointed when she's not part of it. Like, she knows she is more of an asset on the tech side, but she really wants to be part of the danger and the fun. She's so excited when she gets to drive the car for T'Challa and so disappointed when it wrecks because she's not being part of it anymore. She's not having that adventure and that excitement. And then at the end, she says, when you told me that you were bringing me to California, I thought you were going to bring me to Coachella or Disneyland. Like, her plan was something fun, not a new project, being in a bad neighborhood, you know, those kinds of things. I think she embodies the best of the seven.
Yeah, I do too. And that relationship with Nakia really helps us flesh out that line that ones and sevens have to one another. And I'd like to see more of that when we get Black Panther 2, see where they take this relationship.
I'm really curious about what they're going to do in the movie without their lead character, because I heard they're not recasting him.
They kill him off. I mean, that's my prediction. They kill him off early. And then we bring in a new Black Panther. And I haven't read the comics of Black Panther as extensively. So it's very possible that others have stepped in that role. They can't bring Killmonger back in because they killed him off.
Right.
So I'm sure maybe Shuri does take up the Black Panther mantle. I don't know. MCU is definitely leaning towards those sarcastic anti-heroes. Mm-hmm. Or unique heroes anyways. I don't know. We'll see. If you know something, drop us a line and we will probably blab the secret. We don't keep secrets too well.
I think it's going to be out in 22.
It is. Yeah.
This year.
So with that said, I said Killmonger dies in this. Let's talk about Killmonger.
Well, he's definitely in the aggressive stance.
You think?
That's not a big leap. So for people who are new to the Enneagram, there are three what's usually called stances. One is the aggressive stance. One is the withdrawing stance. One is the dependent stance. And that's basically, how do we go about getting what we want? Are you someone who withdraws? Are you someone who tries to please and appease? Or are you someone who goes after what you want and goes against others? And Killmonger goes against. The aggressive stance are threes, sevens, and eights. And I'm pretty sure he's an eight.
Yeah. And if we cross that with, say, the harmonics, and we say, does he lean into competency? Does he lean into reactions? I think he's a reactionary guy. He responds to what's in his thing. And he does so well. I mean, he's very adept. He's very competent. He is very good at killing people. Hence the name.
He's also incredibly angry.
He is. And that's fair. I mean, when we talk about the injustice of his father's murder, and then you couple that with he knows that he's leaving his nephew there all by himself. Mm-hmm. Not cool. Not cool.
It's often thought that eights have had early childhood experiences that force them to grow up too soon, to take on adult responsibilities. Often that's some kind of abandonment or bereavement. Sometimes abuse. I've said before that I don't think our childhood wounds determine our Enneagram number, because lots of people have the same kind of wound and end up having different Enneagram numbers. But we also can't deny that our experiences shape who we become. Mm-hmm. And it could be that Killmonger was already an eight, since he looked like he was 8, 9, 10 years old. I think his personality was already settled by then. But what could have been a great leader, a great advocate for justice, a fierce defender of the marginalized and the oppressed, becomes someone who does all of those things through murder, through lawbreaking, by creating new types of injustice. And that's the difference between a healthy eight and an unhealthy eight. It's, are you going to be a fearless defender of the oppressed, or are you going to become an oppressor in order to fix what you see as broken? And fortunately for him, it's the latter.
Yeah. And have you watched any of the What If series?
I have not.
They do an episode on Killmonger.
Really?
And it's titled, What Would Happen? What If Killmonger Saved Tony Stark? So, you know, Iron Man gets a start because he gets caught up in and a firefight. He gets injured, and then he has to make the first Iron Man suit. Mm-hmm. So in that, Killmonger hears about what's going on and actually goes and shows up to the firefight because he knows what's happening. He saves Tony, and together they begin building these Iron Man type prototypes. But it's different because now Killmonger is there pulling strings and forcing the situation to once again be directed back to Wakanda. His goal is always to get to Wakanda, always to empower it. And he's much more successful this time because he doesn't have to kill, well, he does kill T'Challa, but he doesn't have to kill T'Challa in a ritual way. He can do so quietly in a way that lets him be embraced by all the leadership of Wakanda as the strong, powerful king that they need to lead them to saving others in the world. He always ends back in this place of, we are doing so because people all around the world who are people of color have been oppressed, and we can arm them and they'll never have to be weak again. Right? That's his concern. He doesn't want anyone to be weak again, mm-hmm. that looks like him. And so, yeah, it's interesting. And Scream's 8, I don't think I ever had a different number in my head as I was watching the film. Did you? Maybe no. A 3 at one point, but that didn't last long.
Well, for him, it's about strength, mm-hmm. not success. Like the title of King and Black Panther is not the goal. Mm-hmm. It's the means to achieving the goal of being able to arm others with vibranium. And even looking at his physicality, anyone can be buff. I don't know if Michael B. Jordan is an Enneagram 8 and it's his actual body, but the character himself, he's put a lot of work into his body to cultivate extreme physicality and strength. And the scarification is very interesting to me, which different cultures use scarification for different reasons. And it seems as if some Wakandan tribes, that's part of their culture. So I don't know how much of it was that, but for him, it represents a kill. Mm-hmm. It's not a mark of beauty. It's a mark of strength, of his fearlessness. And he's displaying on his body a reason for you to be intimidated by him.
And going back to the episode, the What If episode, when he kills Tony Stark, he takes his shirt off as he's finishing off Tony Stark and shows him, and he says the line, you know, every one of these marks is a kill. Finishes Tony and then adds a mark in front of him. So yeah, I don't. That was such an impactful moment in that episode. I love the What If series. You know, you have to watch a lot of MCU to get it, but it's great.
Well, are you ready to talk about the true king of Wakanda?
T'Challa. We struggled with T'Challa, didn't we? We did land on a number, but it took some conversation between the two of us.
Yeah, he is a good leader. But he's not a natural leader, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
He is someone who has a lot of self-doubt, which I think is actually a good thing. I believe it's a mark of humility to recognize that you're unprepared or that you're not totally equipped, because then you will look for people to help you. And he does that. He relies on his council. If we compare him to, say, Killmonger is like, this is what we're doing. The council is almost useless. They just happen to be in the room when he makes the decisions. But T'Challa listens to the advice of the people on his council and the representatives from each of the tribes. He's seeking outside opinions. He loves his dad, and he's not ambitious. He doesn't want the crown if it means losing his dad. So he doesn't seem like a three. Not that a three would celebrate the death of their father, but he's not ambitious in the way that he's so excited about being king and being Black Panther. He does it as a duty. He's raised to do it, but he doesn't seem to have the same burden that a one would have.
And I think looking at his leadership, I'm glad you highlighted that, because this was said to me by somebody, and I'm trying to remember who off the top of my head. So I'd love to credit someone else. This is someone else's idea. I can't remember who said this to me. They were talking about the Enneagram, and they said, it seems like there are different seasons and times when different Enneagram types can shine, particularly in leadership roles. And they were referring, it was my coach. He was referring to the upcoming season. He said, I think this in the next season, these types of leaders are going to shine because of the nature of the pandemic, the nature of political unrest, like because of all these things, this Enneagram type is going to shine. I think at Wakanda, we see that happening where we have the one type of leadership, which is the dominant, powerful king who shows up and just makes the decision and leads with force and leads with the spear. And then we have T'Challa, who is strong. I mean, he is strong, but he's others referencing. He's thinking because Wakanda is in a moment of transition where they can lean back on their previous history of power and secrecy, or they can move into this world of acknowledging that others don't have what they have and that they can do something about that. And so he's the right person for the right time. I don't think we've put a number to him. We think he's a six.
We do.
We think he's reactionary. We think that he cares about the system. He feels safe within the system and he abides by it.
Very hesitant to change.
Because he could bypass it. If he wanted to, he could have said, nope, you know what? I don't like this. I'm not taking the challenge. He takes on the challenge because that's what's required of their system. Mm-hmm. This is a person with legitimate, you know, or apparently legitimate reason to challenge him for the throne. And he accepts and he gives up his power. Like, you know, there's so many things that he does that leans into the six. He's loyal to his people. And that's ultimately what brings him back. That's what leads him. He's loyal to his dad. When he loses his dad, initially he needs that. Him going to commune with his ancestors, he gets that leadership and that guidance that the six desires and wants. Anything I'm missing, Kate?
I think you picked up on a lot of it. He does seem to me to be someone who is perhaps scanning for danger. Again, that's often in combat situations, which is kind of have to put that into a different box, that it's not anxiety when there are legitimate dangers. That's just survival. And so a lot of those situations where we see him scanning or being anxious or fearful, it's in situations where it is completely appropriate and necessary for him to be falling into that pattern. For me, what really settles the six is his lack of trust of his own judgment. It feels like he grows in that and he learns to trust himself a bit more. But that seems like part of his own work. And also the highlight is when he has already been defeated. The climax is when he's been defeated and he still comes back to fight and he shows that courage. And that's the virtue of a six, that their passion is fear, but their virtue is courage. Mm. And we see both of those things. And we see him be courageous in the way he leaves tradition of keeping Wakanda's technological advances a secret and allowing the world to think that they're a third world country of farmers and impoverished people, when really they're more advanced than anyone else. And he comes out of the shadows and he starts to share their knowledge to make the world a better place, but to do it in a way that is healthy and works with others instead of running over others. And he does that because of the women who are at his side, which is kind of feminist if you really think about it. Like he's not someone who, as much as sixes like to have the strong man, which we use, it's not always a man, but it's often a man because for a variety of reasons, men tend to project power differently and more obviously than a lot of women do. But he really trusts the advisors in his life. That's Nakia, Okoye, his mother, his sister. And he listens to these women and he listens to their wisdom. And he even trusts himself enough to break from his father, to recognize what his father did wrong in leaving his cousin, to hide the truth. And that's a huge step for him. So we're seeing his growth, his arc as a character, and it looks like a six arc to mm-hmm. my mind.
I agree.
I think a healthy six can be an incredible leader. And we often don't hear about them as much because they're not the people that get the limelight in the same way. They're not the bombastic eights that you can't possibly ignore. They're not the sevens that draws everyone's attention, or the threes who make sure they have your attention. But they're cooperative. They work with others. They gather wisdom. They're thoughtful. They're careful. And that can be problematic at times, but often it's really wise. It's a good way to lead.
And we get that sense that he's a good leader, that he cares about his people, but he's not going to be rash. He's going to think through. He's going to ask questions. He's going to do the right thing. We see that in so many ways that he affects the rest of the MCU and taking in Bucky Barnes and the way that they show up in the Avengers or, you know, in the Infinity War and things like that, that he is a thoughtful leader and he knows when the right time to act is. Mm-hmm. Not too early, not too late. He just knows when's the right moment. Mm-hmm. Well, this is great. I always love hitting the MCU. I'm a big nerd.
I love the Marvel movies. I wish DC, with the exception of Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman is incredible. But apart from Wonder Woman, DC has not done nearly as good of a job with their hero adaptations.
They've done a better job of TV shows than they've done of movies for the most part, even though I do like a number of the movies.
You're a DC guy, though, right?
If you I had am to a DC pay. Guy, yeah.
You like Batman.
A lot.
Okay. I think Batman is a one.
I do, too. Does that mean we're not doing any of the Batman movies, even the new one?
Oh, I'm not opposed to seeing it. My real sadness is everyone knows how I love Henry Cavill. I stopped even watching the Superman movies, despite my love for Henry Cavill, because I thought they were just terrible. Not that the individuals who were part of them were terrible, but the movies in and of themselves.
I am willing to die on this hill. I loved Batman versus Superman.
Well, you're allowed to love it. I haven't seen it, so I can't make any statements about it other than the others were so bad. I had no interest in seeing it. Are we still friends?
I mean, we are, but you know.
You're going to need a little time to forgive me.
I mean, this is what I did. So The Dark Knight came out the night before I got married. And I went with my groomsmen to go see The Dark Knight at midnight before my wedding.
What time did you get married?
It was in the afternoon.
So you weren't like tired at your wedding ceremony?
No. My father-in-law actually dropped me off like 3 hours before the ceremony. I just wandered the facilities bored, looking for something to do. Like I went and helped the DJ set up the sound equipment and the like crawling around plugging in speakers just because I'm so bored. I have a lot of funny wedding stories.
My favorite.
Nope.
Okay. All right. But here's a hot tip, because we both made this mistake. When you get married.
Hold on. Am I going to regret telling you that story?
No. I promise. I'm not going to share anything personal about you. Our young listeners or listeners who have not gotten married, who may get married in the future. When you go to your reception, eat at your reception. Because for a variety of reasons, you will regret it later. And the remedy for your hunger may or may not be problematic later. So I'll leave it at that. There's your hot tip. Eat at your wedding reception.
I don't believe it happens. I would love to know the couple that actually eats at their wedding reception.
I certainly didn't. I only got a bite of cake. We went through a McDonald's drive-thru in my floofy wedding dress on the way to the hotel because I was starving.
Yeah, that's the typical. I've taken couples did drive through afterwards.
One of my girlfriends did plan a sit down dinner at her reception for that very reason, because her sister was starving. She's like, I'm paying all this money. I want to be able to eat dinner. Look, I get it. That's fair enough.
I heard the food was great at our reception.
Well, Lance, do you want to tell our audience about our episode for next week?
I do. So next week we're tuning into an episode. I'm actually really excited about this one. For some reason, I have never seen this film. I feel like I've been missing out. I don't know why I've never seen this film. We are watching The Color Purple. Fantastic book. Amazing, amazing movie. I'm looking forward to it.
I've never seen it either, nor have I read the book. So I feel like I'm in for a good experience. I mean, yeah. Oprah's in it.
I know Oprah's in it. And I've not seen Oprah act in anything.
I feel like she's going to be good, though. Also, I just put it in Amazon. So if you're someone who would like to read it and not just watch it, you can currently get the book on Kindle for free right now.
Ooh. It's part of Unlimited?
Yes. It is part of Kindle Unlimited. And you could also use one of those Audible credits. If you don't have an Audible account, you can get a free trial, a month trial, and use it for that.
Tell me more about these Audible free trials, Kate.
Well, because we read so much and because we use Audible so much, we thought, hey, maybe Audible wants to sponsor us since we talk about it basically every episode. And turns out they're perfectly willing to do that. So if you are interested in listening to audiobooks, Audible is a great resource to do that. Lance and I both have Audible accounts. It's well worth it. You get one book every month as part of your plan. You can do more than that if you want to. There's an additional fee. But even if you aren't sure you're ready to commit to the investment of the monthly fee, you can try it out, get 1 month free. You can go to our website at nerdogrampodcast.com. There's a link, get a free month, which means you get a free book that you can listen to and decide whether or not Audible's for you and you support the podcast at the same time.
There's only one problem with that, Kate.
What's that?
Do you spend your free Audible credit on The Color Purple, or do you spend it on our Nerdogram Book Club Book of the Month?
Oh, decisions. I think for me, it would have to be the Book Club of the Month, because 7 days in June is incredible.
I have not started, and I need to get started because that episode is coming up soon.
It is. So, friends, you have lots of opportunities to participate in us. You can read The Color Purple by next week. You can watch the film with Oprah Winfrey, the queen of America. Like, if we had a queen, it would probably be Oprah.
Let's she hangs with royalty.
I mean...
Or former royalty, I guess.
Yeah. She could do an investiture and, like, make us knights and dames. And it would make sense in my brain. If she had a sword and put it on my shoulders and called me Dame Kate... I'd be totally down with that. Okay, I'm going to stop now. It's late. I'm not making sense anymore, although I do secretly wish I could become a dame, but I won't because I'm not a British citizen, but I'll get over that. Anyway, The Color Purple for next week and 7 days in June for our February book club.
That's all for me.
That's all for me.